Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With the bases loaded and one out.
Oh, my God.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam.
Hello and welcome in, everyone, to episode 207 of the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Kurland. You can follow me on X at Mike underscore Kurland and joined, as always, by George. We don't have guests. We are too lazy to go about it, and it's okay. But, George, it's always fun to just talk to me and you, buddy. How you doing?
Yeah, that's right. What's up, man? Doing good. Just knocking out some more drafts. Going on vacation next week, so going to wrap up like these last DC that I've got going on and then take a little break, go on vacation.
So as you mentioned, George on vacation, I won't force an episode, so likely no episode next week. But hey, 3 weeks in a row, already a win. And not to mention that, I forgot what I was going to say, actually. Brain already going that direction, I'm in trouble. Completely forgot what I was going to say. Doesn't matter. But what we're going to do is talk about ADP 100 through 200, kind of talk about just some of the players in that range. Overall, I think we should talk about some strategy, like what we think about doing as we enter those picks, those rounds. And like, I like, for reference, I start looking for pockets of perceived value, guys that I really like based on skill sets and based on team build. So that's where I start. Kind of ADP matters, but in a way of like, I don't mind jumping ADP a little bit here. I won't go crazy and take somebody draft like round 180-ish in ADP to like 120. But if I see, if I'm picking at like around 150, 160, and this guy's going around 180, and I don't think this guy is going to come back to me, I have no problem jumping him up a couple, like 20, 30 picks. That would be two. I know it's like two rounds, but that's why there's min and max picks. So I don't know. I like to look at min and max picks while I'm drafting too. And like Max Muncy falls in this range right now. He's 172 overall, minimum 131, max at 213. So like, if I think the min at 131 is a bit low, especially considering his ADP, maybe I'll be more likely to gamble going for Muncy. Whereas maybe there's a guy that I like more. Maybe there's a guy like Riley Green I like more, who's going right around 175 right now on average over the, and this is ADP over the last month in Draft Champions for reference. Maybe I'll jump him up to 150-ish. So I look to try to jump. I have no problem jumping people 20-ish picks, give or take. I don't mind. So basically a round in 15 teamers, a round or so, round and a half. I think that this is that range where I start doing that because I'm looking for players that are fitting my team builds. I don't care what the ADP is as much here. I just like to pick my favorite spots, favorite pockets, and kind of go from there. Is there anything else that you might do any different or kind of a similar approach when you enter these rounds?
Yeah, similar approach. I mean, when we went through the like the top 100, we kind of like talked about how we like to start building our teams out. And I mentioned like I like to get a lot of pitching and like at least like three starting pitchers usually in the top like six, seven rounds. So then like these next 100 picks, like I'm hammering like a lot of hitting. So that's kind of where I found myself going. Like I'll go like five or six straight hitters here, here in these rounds, like after the sixth, seventh round. So yeah, I mean, I haven't found myself like targeting like closers or there's some pitchers that I do like. Like if I want to get like a fourth starting pitcher in this range, I haven't tried waiting. I might try waiting like on my third starter because I do like some of these guys going just after 100. I might try a draft where like I wait on my third starter and grab one in this range, but haven't gotten there yet. Like, so if we kind of just start with the ADP here at the top, You've got like Justin Steele at 102 over the last month. And Joe Musgrove, Walker Buehler, and Cole Reagans. And I guess we could put Tanner Bibee. They're all going like within six picks of each other. Steele, Musgrove, Buehler, Reagans, and Bibee. You got a little pocket there. Is there anyone there that stands out to you? Have you gotten any of those guys?
So I have a little bit of a few guys here. Steele, so everyone knows, or if you don't know, you will now, that Justin Steele was a guy I was really in on last year, but it was because he was going around pick 300. I saw a path to upside there because, and that's, we can talk about that in the later game stuff, but a lot of it's like, I'll chase potential, like a guy that has a chance to be like, hey, he showed a little bit of changes in the second half and look at the price he's going at. Why not see if that actually continues? So like, that's what led me to Steele, was the success. And but it was such a small sample that I don't like that same small sample. People are drafting, like Tarek Subal is a bad example. It's not apples to apples exactly, but we're taking these small samples, and guys like Justin Steele had a very, very strong, although smaller sample than Subal. He still had a very strong, complete change in arsenal and success in like a 30 inning sample in 2022. So that's what made me like, let me go after him in 2023. And now we see that with Skubal, but Skubal was like 70 something innings or 80 innings and elite production. So now instead of getting him at in the hundreds or like right here where Reagans is at, we'll talk about him in a moment. But that's the kind of thing where it's like, so I don't know how I got on this tangent. I always do this, but so Steele, I guess what I'm getting at is that the new price, I get it. It makes sense. But I watched a lot of Steele last year because, you know, having him, you just kind of want to watch his starts. And there, I guess I know there's a lot of deception with his pitches. I know Steele has, I think it's like the fastball plays different ways, or is it the slider? He throws it harder sometimes and slower. Sometimes he can get more of a cut action out of it versus a sweeping action. I think that's what it is with him. And then he tunnels the ball really well. So then that I get it. So it's really two pitches playing as three, which is a big deal because Steele doesn't really have that third pitch. But man, I swear, I don't understand how he throws like low 90s and he's with his fastball getting whiffs. And he seems so hittable. And towards the end of last year, we see him kind of like stumble a little bit. I know he dealt with like a forearm issue that made him miss like one or two starts, and that was it. So, and we never heard about it again. So I guess he's fine, but I don't know. I feel like I'm scared of Steele because I feel like what we got last year was obviously the ceiling, and I'm waiting for the regression to hit. I'm ready for the regression monster to be like complete full on, like, nope, you're done, Steele. And so I have no Steele, and I don't know if that's going to be a mistake. I don't really have FOMO because I don't mind Musgrove. I know there's injury concerns there coming off that was a shoulder even. So there's that. Walker Buehler, I don't have any of yet. I don't know if I have FOMO there. There's talks about him not even possibly be ready for the start of the season, but I think that's more rumor mill than there is actually any substantiating facts behind that. Reagans, I actually have some Reagans because what you saw was like, you're getting that small sample of like success, but you're not paying for such a obscene price for it. So I've scattered in. I recently just took Reagans in draft. He's not a must get guy, but I really enjoyed taking SP3s right here. And I think he falls in that realm of SP3s. Bibee was like all over my early teams, but because it's one of those things where I'm diversifying, so I have no problem with Bibee. I know Pollock kind of scares me off him because Pollock was talking about how Bibee and how his pitches don't really stand out, but I think Bibee could be more of a pitcher than like an elite stuff guy. So, but if that's how I start feeling about him, and I need to do look more into him actually. But if that's kind of the type of pitcher he is, then how much better is he than a guy going, some guys going behind him? So I like Bibee and Reagans the most of this group personally, and those are guys I've landed on. But I'm very open-minded to taking almost anybody out of that group. But I think the two that stand out to me personally, have you landed on any of these guys though? I know you were talking about how like you typically get your SP3 here, right?
I usually have an SP3 by now, but I think I would definitely want to try to maybe do a few drafts where I wait on SP3 in this range. And I think between these guys here, I think Steele's actually my favorite. We saw his skill.
That scares me, man. He scares me. And I lied. This is my fallback. These are my real quick. Sorry. I know I talk enough, but these are my fallback options. I wanted to just clarify because I realized that these are guys have been in my SP3 when I've whiffed on my SP3. Like these are guys that I've learned to fall back on as like in case of emergency break glass SP3s. So these aren't my SP3s. I'm with you. These are usually my SP4s because I usually go really pitcher heavy. But I've landed in some drafts where these guys have become my SP3s. So I'd rather not. I'm with you, actually. I wanted to clarify that because I realized I might have said the opposite of that. So yeah, no, those are usually my SP4s. You're right. And that's why, but that's why I like to go shopping for SP4s. Anyway, as you were.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually if I have like I wait on SP4 till like the back end of this range of the top 100, but yeah, if I'm going to get one of these guys, I think Steele is probably my favorite just because we saw that skill jump in the second half of 2022 and he did bring it over into 2023. I mean, the last two seasons now, he's over his last 292 innings, he's got a 3.11 ERA. And I mean, I just think the skills look legit. He like last year, you see the ground ball rate, good ground ball rate, really excellent walk rate. I mean, there is a chance that we see a little bit of regression there in the walk rate. I like 5% is really hard to replicate. And like you did mention, like his hitability, his BABIP like 2 years in a row now is 317. So if we do see that walk rate regress a bit, I could see him ending up with like a whip that's maybe won't help you. I don't know if it's going to kill you, but yeah, that's I like to really. This is why I haven't like waited on my SP3. I like to get three like top guys, but I could see Steele here as the one that I will wait for, just because I think we've seen it over the last year and a half now. So I think these skills are pretty established for him. And yeah, for the other guys, I mean, like Musgrove and Bueller, it's kind of the injury and workload concerns. Bueller, I've just had a complete like blind spot for. I think some of it is like just the last time we seen him, he wasn't very good, and then he gets hurt. He's out last year, and then you wonder just how far the Dodgers are going to let him go this season. Reagan's the small sample, the questions regarding his control. He had a 10.5% walk rate last year, 0.275 BABIP, and he ended up with a 1.16 WHIP. Again, just one of these guys who, I mean, he could potentially like hurt you in WHIP if you have him here like as your SP3. I think the strikeouts are going to be there. The velocity jump last year, you know, he held that really is where his skills took off, is with that velo jump. If he can carry that over, I think we do see the strikeouts there. I'm just, everything else is a little questionable. And if you're, and if I'm banking on this, like over, 80, 90 inning sample from last year, this is not something that I think I'm going to take a chance on. And then I think maybe Bybee might be my second favorite. If I don't wait on Steele, I might grab Bybee. I think you put it well, like that he's like, could be more of a pitcher kind of guy. I mean, and Cleveland, obviously, like, you know, they have a good track record with guys like this. So I do like Bybee. I think I would go Steele and then Bybee. And then I think I'm kind of fading the other guys.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Reagan's is just, it's more so, I just see the upside there. I know maybe you shouldn't be chasing upside that early, but I think he showed enough to where I'm excited for him about him and to see if he could build off that. Well, I think the price tag is fair, considering I think the upside is baked into that price tag, but as well as the injury risk, because again, we saw, it goes back to talking about Skubal a little bit, that we saw Skubal, although better, put up such great numbers, and he's going 50 picks ahead of him on average. And it's one of those things where I think Reagan's, if they flip-flopped at one point because of like whatever injury performance, I don't know if we'd all be too surprised. I don't know if that speaks higher of Reagan's or lower of Skubal. I just don't think that 50 picks should be what's between them. I think Skubal should be ahead of Reagan's. I just don't know if 50 picks is justified because of a few extra innings and Reagan's having a couple bumpy starts along the way. But right here, see, I personally, I know you're not a closer guy, but like Kimbrel goes right here, 107. And I believe Holmes is right around here too somewhere. I have no problem with those guys being my RP2. I don't like getting this far without my second relief pitcher, because I'm not comfortable like you are with relief pitching. So I like to address it and get guys I feel are more secure in their role. And I know Holmes, Jansen aren't like the sexy names, aren't names you really want. And those aren't guys I necessarily want, especially Jansen. I have one Jansen share, and I don't think I'm going to have any more. I think it was one of those like not panic picks, but I really, you don't understand how uncomfortable I get. Not so like right now, I actually made a point to be uncomfortable, made myself uncomfortable. And I'm in a draft right now where I'm around pick two something, and I don't have a second closure yet. So I'm going to be playing that game of, guess I'm drafting some depth at relief pitcher in the reserve rounds, you know? And I don't like that, because I feel like there's so much more value to be had getting your secure innings, getting your secure depth in the for position players in those reserve rounds instead of chasing saves. I think chasing saves is something you shouldn't be doing. I don't like doing it in the reserve rounds. I don't want to have more than four or five relief pitchers if I can, because I think that there's more value to be had. Unless you can hit on this year's Will Smith, which is very, very tough to do. But someone like you, maybe you're more likely to do it because this is what you're so in tune with versus me. My stuff is lineup stuff, right? So I like the idea of chasing these hitters in the reserve rounds. So it goes back to playing to your strengths. And I think highlighting that in these rounds is a big deal, because although you're completely out on these names because you don't chase closers here, would you take one of these guys as your first relief pitcher maybe? Whereas if this is my second, would that not be a difference?
Yeah, it depends. Like if I see someone fall, I was in a DC recently where like I saw Clay Holmes fall like into the 130s, 140s. I think, his max pick over these last 30 days is 148. Like I could see myself definitely like maybe grabbing one like in that range if they fall. But generally, for the most part, like I'm looking at the hitters here. Like we have a few third basemen here, like Nolan Arenado, and Alex Bregman and Josh Young. Bregman, Arenado, just like super safe guys. You kind of know what you're going to get, you know, 260 average, 25 homers and a bunch of counting stats. I've gotten Josh Young a couple of times, but it's when he's fallen, like his ADP is at 109 in the last month with a max pick of 129. I've actually seen him fall into the 120s. A few times, and I will grab him there. I won't really take him around his ADP right now, just because like I like another third baseman going a little later that we'll touch on, I'm sure, like Berger. And I think they're pretty similar. You see, like Josh Young, like I don't love the plate approach. Some swing and miss, and not a lot of walks. I think the power is very legit. Big time hard hit rate, line drives. So his BABIP is going to be a little higher. He's probably going to have a little higher BABIP, but it was 340 last year and he hit 266. I could see that definitely coming down. Another guy I really like in this range that I know we're both on, and Seiya Suzuki. He's a guy I like grabbing here. Improved the walk rate, improved the strikeout rate last year. Like Young, he had a 341 BABIP, hit 285, pulled the ball a little bit more. We saw him really take off in the second half. I really like Suzuki, and he'll chip in a few steals as well. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking at in this early 100s range.
And this is where I like Suzuki. I really do. But I don't land on him a lot because I typically, again, it goes back to how I address my team. I really prefer, as much as I like Suzuki, I like to get my SP4 or RP2 here. So I don't get as much of Suzuki as I like. Now, if he falls towards his max of 132, I think I land on him more. And that's the thing. I like the price for Suzuki. Maybe it speaks to me needing to be more comfortable letting certain players fall and attacking different areas of the draft, because I really like Suzuki. It's going to come at the expense of some of these guys. Like I haven't seen Suzuki last where it's like I end up taking a Bybee as my SP4 and then having Suzuki available to me. Just in my drafts, it's not happening. So it's most things where if like I want Suzuki, I usually have to go get him, and that causes me to miss out on my SP4, my RP2. And it's just a reminder, like I just can't stress enough that my team builds so far have not let me. I haven't veered enough away from what's my comfort zone. So I need to, and that's why I did it in this last draft. And I'm liking my offense and my overall pitching staff pretty good in that draft, but having no secure RP2 is really giving me anxiety. I'm going into round 15 or 16 with no RP2. So it's like, I gotta probably have to, maybe I have to reach for guys. Maybe I have to just kind of go after be really aggressive going for the usual, Abreu types, Stevenson, and hope Stevenson this year has become my David Robertson of last year, where I was all over David Robertson at cost because I was just like, he'll get a job. But now it's looking less and less likely that Stevenson lands a closing gig, or if he does, it'll be for a decent price. Cause I know the projected contract form isn't all that, it seems rather affordable for a lot of teams. So if he's not the guy, I think he'll be the next guy up at least. And I hate paying fringe three, pick 350-ish, and we're going outside the ADP range today to talk about him. But it's just one of those things where he was so good that if he can repeat that, he'll close or he'll get some saves this year. You know what I mean? So regardless, I don't think he's going to a team that's not contending is the problem. So does he go to a Rangers and take over from Leclerc? That's a possibility. That's where you're kind of hoping he lands. But if he doesn't go there and he goes to, I don't know, the Dodgers or somewhere else, you're like, yeah, he could compete for saves in LA, because that's like the one spot the Dodgers don't have like paying up for yet, unless they go get Hader. But I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot of, it's weird because if same thing with the pitching, there's a lot of safe hitters. You mentioned Bogarts, Castellanos, like you kind of can plug these guys in, right? They're sat down with a pen. But a guy that's not secured in terms of like what you would expect, because it could be really good, or like he can come up short, is Tristan Casas, pick 112. And I have no Casas, and it's mostly because of the skill set, I think we can get behind him. So I don't really like, I like the growth we saw in the second half of Casas. I like that he hit lefties well. Like people might see, oh, he hit only 215 against them. He still had an 817 OPS on the year against lefties. A 32% K rate could suggest some struggles against them, but maybe that's already built into the batting average. Whereas good OBP, good slug. So at least when he hits lefties, he hits them well, type of thing. So Casas doesn't seem like much of a platoon risk compared to like how he entered the year last year. And I don't know, I probably should be more in, but it's one of those things where I'm not out on him. I'm out on him because of his skill set or what he brings to the table. I'm out on him because I feel I can get something very similar round, like even the next round, like what, 12 picks later in Torque. I think Torque's batting average might be a little more of a concern, but I think the power is just as legitimate. He's gonna hit in a prime spot in the lineup. There's a lot of similarities there. Okay, I don't like Torque. You talked about Berger. Berger's another guy with a very similar, or Soler. Like, so basically I'm giving up some batting average, but I'm getting very similar power potential and power output. And I'm okay giving up on some of that batting average, because usually I build for the power types. So I was like, I don't mind giving up on, like, if I want to chase some, if I want power, Santander's another good name I like. Very similar. I think that's a very similar skill set and can be a decent batting average. So it's one of those things where I just see that skill set available beyond Casas. So maybe I'm missing out on some of that ceiling, but I think the floors can be very similar and the median production can be very similar in terms of like what names there's mentioned and Casas. So what do you think about Casas?
Yeah, I'm with you. I do have a share of Casas, the last few drafts I've found myself just really liking like waiting on Spencer Torkelson.
Which is weird because I thought I was out on work, but I thought I was out on him, and then I realized I'm not. I haven't gotten a single share, but I will get a share of him because I'm liking more and more where he's, because he used to be, I think Torque was starting off the years closer to 100. Now he's falling like pick 130 ish, and that's a lot more. That the 2-round difference is kind of palatable.
Yeah, and I've kind of gone the other way with him. I think like a couple months ago, like very beginning of draft season, like I thought I'd be out on him too, but no, I'm actually becoming like getting higher on Torque.
Yeah, weird. And I have no shares. Yeah, yet, so I can't say I'm in on a guy until I draft him.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where like, yeah, like this is why I like to establish like my batting average early, because like I want to target guys like Torkelson after 100. And I do like him over Casas. I think I don't see like the big platoon splits. He doesn't like 25% strikeout rate really isn't that bad for a slugger like Torkelson. Good walk rate. You know he's going to be in the lineup every day. 50% hard hit rate. He does hit a ton of fly balls and he pulls the ball up, a ton of pulled fly balls. That's why you see a 14.1% barrel rate. But I love that. I mean, 62 barrels. You know, he doesn't hit in the best park, but I mean, he still got 31 homers last year. I think there's 40 homer potential. He had a 251 expected batting average. He hit 233. And some of that, again, is he's probably going to have a lower, like the ceiling on his BABIP is going to be lower because of his pulled fly ball approach. But I mean, if he hits 250 with 40 homers, batting every day in a good spot in a up and coming Tigers lineup, I mean, I think that's going to be incredibly valuable here. I mean, you're drafting Christian Walker 2 rounds earlier for you know, 30 homers, a 250 average, and a bunch of counting stats. I mean, he threw in some steals last year, but I mean, Torkelson, he stole 3 bases. I mean, it's not much, but it's 3 bases.
You can't justify. Yeah, so, I mean, no, that's where it's like you can't really. Yeah, that's probably the difference. But even then, I love Walker. I can't. Bank. I don't even look at him as a stolen base guy. The 11, I feel like it was a
fluke. Right.
Exactly, if he steals 11 again, great. But when I draft Walker, I'm drafting as a, I'm getting 260, close to 30. And, but that's the thing. Maybe I need to stop. Look, I need to, I just feel the floor is safer there. I think that's what you're paying for. It's like a peace of mind with Walker. I think the peace of mind you're getting from a Christian Walker, whereas Torque we've seen be so bad that you can't start him. I think that just that justifies a price difference, but does it justify it 40 plus picks? Probably not. Maybe that's where it's like I need to reassess, because I find myself drafting Walker for that, for what I felt, what I feel like is a floor of production, realizing I'm contradicting myself because there's not really much difference between Walker, Casas, Torque, Santander. Santander, whatever, however you say his name. And that's why it's like maybe I need to back off Walker at cost, because why am I in on Walker when these guys are going so much cheaper and they're so similar in skill set? So that's where like I'm, the more I look at it, the more I realize either I'm too low, either I'm too high on Walker, or maybe I'm too low on the other options behind him. And that's where SGP comes into play. And it kind of gives you like, when you realize that the dollar values aren't far off, it's like, oh, maybe. And actually, speaking of projections, I wanted to bring one up to you. Unless I know you, I didn't want to, I interrupted you. So if you want to finish your thought there, but.
Oh no, you're, I was pretty much done on Torkel.
So Casas, his projection from Steamer. And again, these are projections, median outcomes. Obviously there's room for growth for both sides, but it's just a fun, like this is when, this is what keeps you grounded for expectations. Cause you can dream on Casas all day, but if you look at the projections and you want to take something that's kind of, like, I feel like projections are rather safe. Are a lot safer for hitters than they are pitchers. I think that's common consensus, but you're looking at 614 plate appearances over 29 home runs, 259 batting average. This is for Casas with the 22.7% strikeout rate. Santander, 30 home runs, 22% strikeout rate, 251 batting average. It's one of those things where the counting stats are even similar. It's like these players, if you look at just the projections, very similar outputs. And one, and what we talked about, Santander going closer to 140, 145-ish, and Casas going what towards the 110s, 115. So it's like a 20 to 30 pick difference. And this is just one of those things where, like, in years past, like for instance, Casas this year reminds me of Pasquantino of last year, where we all just dreamt on the upside and we were pushing him up farther than the projections suggested. Because if you look at SGP, and this is where SGP earned my respect, they were way more right than I was. Regardless, take away the injury, SGP puts a value or helps put a value on the run production, the RBI production, and stuff like that. And we were all dreaming on this upside of Pasquantino, which I think was there. But instead, it's almost like a hey, take a step back and let's look at this. Let's think what you're doing. So you could put your values in. Obviously, again, Casas, I don't think anybody would argue, even me, that he has a higher ceiling than these guys. But I really want to harp on the fact that I think there's some wish casting here in terms of the price, whereas I feel like there's guys very similar skill sets that could produce equal or better, but with safer floors going behind them. And I that's the only reason why I'm really harping on this, is because I think I just want people to look at it with like eyes wide open, not like such a narrow outlook on things. So Casas at cost, I don't think I'm gonna get any this year just because of all the guys behind him. That's all. That's why I keep bringing up Santander, because it's funny because I don't have a lot of Santander because I always miss out on him. But I do like him. I think he's safe and solid. But I think it's one of those things where I'm looking for more extremes in my production here. I'm not looking for such a floor play. And like that's another reason. That's another thing. If I look at Santander and if I go look at Christian Walker, I bet you they have very similar production. So why am I in on Christian Walker? Honestly, I think I just talked myself out of them, and I have a few shares. So I'm going to reassess that situation after the podcast, to be honest. But that's why it's like it's good to talk this stuff out, because you realize these things. And I'm like, well, I still have a lot of drafts left. Very important ones coming up. So having these realizations or these opinions help me as a drafter too. But yeah, so we talked about that little area of closers. Alzolay's there too. We didn't talk about him though. A guy I'll tell you I have none of is Estuary Ruiz. I don't think Ruiz should be drafted in the top 200, let alone top 130. I don't care if he steals 90 bases. He's a negative almost everywhere else. And I don't like Billy Hamilton types. And that's what he is. He's a rabbit. And there was times last year where he lost playing time against righties, and the A's don't care. Apparently the A's like the platoon people. So I don't know if Ruiz's playing time is necessarily guaranteed, especially if he starts off slow again. Doesn't have the best on base skills. So is he going to lead off all year? A team that you would think has no reason not to play him every day, see what they can get out of him, et cetera, they didn't. And that scares me. So that batting average comes with an okay batting average, a lot of stolen bases. I don't care if I have Schwarber and insert another power hitter here. I don't care if that's all I have. I don't care if I have Judge and Schwarber. I'm not drafting Ruiz. I'm never going to go where I'm banking on one guy that can lose playing time or get hurt, and now you have no stolen bases. I don't understand the draft cost here. I don't understand the min pick of 81. Even the max pick of 171, I think, is too high for him. I mean, if I'm crazy, let me know, but I don't see it for Ruiz at all.
No, I'm with you. He's not. This is not the kind of profile that I want this early. I know that he can steal 70 bases, but yeah, you're just relying so much on one person this early for one category that I just can't do that. I know he had a big September, but again, like, you got to take September stats with a grain of salt. 3 homers, 14 steals, .302 batting average in September. I'm completely fading Ruiz.
And I get that the September is very like reasons for optimism, but then teams will throw out new players and who they faced with the Angels, the Twins, the Tigers, the Seattle. Their schedule wasn't the most competitive, but there were definitely teams competing. So I can't just say it was a schedule thing. And there were some decent like matchups, like they faced a very tough Twins rotation. The Rangers, they were hittable, actually. The Rangers just won the World Series, but I feel like people, like, we forget, like, there was, like, shootouts with the Rangers a lot. And yeah, so, I don't know. It's one of those things where I'm just looking at it, just looking at the game logs here. But looking at, moving down just a little bit more, Jordan Walker, I think that's a fair price. I don't think it's like you're in or out. I have a couple early shares, haven't really got back in on them. Verlander, I think we've seen the best of them. I think there's more of an innings eater type of profile. If it last year was any indication, we saw strikeouts take a big hit. Josh Naylor. If he's healthy, he plays every day. Solid, safe, 4 category guy. There's some upside there, but it's more so the floor. The two big names that stand out here: Anthony Volpe and Zach Gelof. I haven't found myself drafting either of them. I have a lot of concern about Gelof personally. But do you have any interest in either of these guys? Or
I haven't found myself. I have one share of Volpe in a Gladiator, but haven't taken them in a DC yet. But I do think that if I was going to take a chance on either one here, it would probably be Volpe. He did go 2020 last year. It's got the high, you know, the prospect pedigree, solid barrel rate, hard hit rate. Got pretty unlucky with the .259 BABIP. You got to expect that to come up. So if he's just even shows a little bit of improvement with some regression in the BABIP, I think he'd be a pretty useful player there going 2020 with, you know, probably won't kill you in batting average the way he did last year with the .209 batting average, because I don't think he's going to give you a .259 BABIP again. And if there's just even a small improvement in his contact, I think there's, you know, pretty good potential there with Volpe. But I haven't found myself drafting either one of these guys just yet. But if there were one here where, like, I was set on batting at, like, I had really good batting average with my first few hitters, I could and I needed some speed, I could see myself maybe getting Volpe there. Going just right after those guys, though, I really like Tyro Estrada.
Yeah.
I think it'd be pretty valuable here, going like as the last of these like middle infield, second base, shortstop guys. He's been going at 137. I think the next middle infielder, you got Tommy Edman going about 20 picks later, Luis Arraez. Well, you can definitely see, and then like no one else.
I feel like I forgot to mention that. I think we should talk about how Edman is probably, I think Edman's expected to miss part of the start of the year because of the surgery he had in the offseason or something. I thought I read something about this the other day. And guess the fallout for that. So Edmund's obviously going to drop in drafts, which is fine. I'm not touching Edmund anyway, especially at this cost. I'm actually mad that he got injured because I was not touching. He was off my boards pretty much. I've just never been an Edmund guy. But Edmund missing time.
So that's one big stolen base source going, that's going to be dropping. But just going back to Tyro, was a lot better in the first half. Had a fractured hand in June. Wasn't completely the same after that, but I think he still went 14-20-23. His batted ball profile like doesn't scream like power. I mean, he had 18 barrels in 2022, hit 14 homers, did the same thing, 14 homers on 18 barrels. Last year did improve the hard hit rate just a little bit, but he does pull the ball a lot, so you're going to see him be a little more efficient on those barrels, those pulled fly balls. So I could definitely see that power just kind of hanging around there. I wouldn't project him to maybe reach 20. I do think that where he's going to improve is on the volume, on the playing time. He went 14-23 last year on 530 plate appearances. I could definitely see Tyro. I mean, the Giants are a team that is just desperate for like that, like the team and the fan base are desperate for players to kind of rally around and start building around. And you look at that roster, like Tyro is one of the guys that stand out that, you know, that they just got to put out there every day. I think we're going to start to see a little shift in philosophy with the Giants. Not as many. They're still going to, you know, have their platoon spots. But I think Tyro is one of these guys who is probably going to stick in the lineup every day. Despite not being like a fantastic hitter, 722 OPS in 2022, 731 OPS last season. I mean, he's one of their better guys. I could see also, you know, Gabe Kapler wasn't really one to run a ton. You're getting Bob Melvin there managing the Giants now. His stolen base like rate, Bob Melvin stolen base rate was like twice as much as Gabe Kapler's last season. So I could definitely see Tyro running a bit more. He attempted 30 steals and went 23 for 7. Over a full season, I could see 30, 35 steals for Tyro. Like I could basically see Tyro doing like a Ha-Seong Kim impersonation like this next season, like, you know, 15 to 17 homers and 30, 35 steals. And he's the last of these guys. You're getting the best price. There are a couple other guys who are like similar profiles going much earlier with like Andres Jimenez and Bryson Stott, you know, very, very similar profiles. Ha-Seong Kim going much, much earlier. And you're getting Tyro down here in the 130s. I'm very much in on him at this price.
Yeah, I actually like Tyro Shaw a lot, and I agree. I prefer him over Geloff and Volpe. Going back to the Volpe and Geloff thing, I was just looking at some plate appearance projection numbers. So if you think Volpe can lead off by the end of the year, great. However, there's a chance he doesn't. There's a chance that Volpe doesn't take that step forward, and he's just kind of a similar player to he was last year, right? That's part of the outcome, potential outcomes. But now you bat him, say, seventh in this Yankees lineup. Now, this Yankees lineup dropped off almost like a full 10% of play appearance per lineup spot last year, which is just a weird stat, but I have it because I run these numbers because I'm weird with playing time. And so if you regress that back to 2022, you know, when the Yankees weren't complete shit show and were able to actually get playing time, the seventh spot, we'll say that he bats seventh. If it's closer to 2022's production, that's 4 at-bats a game, basically, rounding, goes 4.02. So, and the Oakland Athletics last year, which I feel like are going to be very similar this year because they had a slight improvement, but nothing crazy. So we'll say 4.4 at-bats per game for the second hole hitter. So if you're getting the extra, almost like we'll say fourth of an at-bat, over a season, 162 game season, that's a roughly 60 at-bat plate appearance difference, right? Fancy way of saying, like on the like over a full season, there's a clearer path to more playing time because I don't think Geloff loses that two spot as easy as easily. Whereas Volpe really needs to earn moving up the lineup, and I'm putting him at 7 on average. I mean, really, he'll move up and down based on lineups. He could bat as low as 9th versus righties and as high as like, I don't know, 5th, 6th against lefties probably. So I'm just trying to give out these general numbers, but my point being is that Geloff might get, I think where Geloff gets an edge is that I think playing time is not only just, I think they both have very secure playing time. I think Geloff has a path to more potential because of the plate appearance difference if you're looking at projecting playing time. So however, with that said, I still like Geloff more because the lineup context, like the park context more, that's where Volpe kind of takes over. Like I'm banking more on quality than quantity there with Volpe. So I'm picking between the two. I think I'm going Volpe here because Geloff, like some of his stuff just scares me, man. Last year, everyone wants to look at a small sample and just look how good he was, but people don't realize how bad he was against lefties. A 486 OPS against lefties, 35% K rate. That could be reasons for pessimism. I should probably look at his minor league numbers, but I didn't. Kyra, very big home ballpark, so we know the home runs like were 9 on the road, 5 at home. So obviously, it's going to be an issue because he doesn't have that legit power. But what he did show, what that could help make up for the power, because I know Bubba's might be listening, and Bubba's a huge Geloff guy. He was able to barrel the ball well and have a really good sweet spot percentage. So Geloff has those skills and with plus speed. So there's a little pop, little speed. 2020 isn't out of the question, but he lacked elevated poolside balls and a ton of whiffs in his game. And the swing and miss is evident all throughout the minors. So we can see there's so much potential up and down there, and then the counting stats could be a concern. I can't get behind Geloff at that cost. And it goes back to, and I know it's a long-winded way of saying this, but it ends up going back to Estrada being kind of like better than both and going after them. So I'm taking Estrada over them every time. And I'm okay if the ceiling's not as high, but I think the floor is a lot higher. And I think the ceiling is underappreciated, and maybe we shouldn't be talking off. Maybe we shouldn't talk up Thairo Shotta. Maybe we should just let people keep doing Volpe, but they go right next to each other. So, and it's funny because you can see Geloff high of 107, low of 150, Volpe high of 109, low of 175. What you have here is a Shotta right in the like 121 to 160. Like he just sits in this like a steadier. It's almost like the production expectations. You know, there's high highs, lows lows, and then you have this guy that's like steady Eddie right in the middle. The ADP also shows that. But another guy. Oh, let's get this out of the way. You agree with getting your catcher one here because it's like the perfect catcher spot, right? Every podcast says it, every catcher breakdown, blah blah blah. But I don't need it. You can say what names if you want to, I don't care. But just in general, if you want catchers here, this is the spot to take them, I think, for your first catcher.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good spot. I've found myself, some of my favorite targets, going a little bit later, Francisco Alvarez 147, or I will wait on Logan Ohapi at 159. Neither are going to help you in batting average, but they both have legit power. So I like Alvarez and Ohapi, personally, as like one of my, as like my first catcher.
Yeah, I have no problem falling back on them. I have no problem taking, the other day in my, one of my drafts, actually, I wasn't planning on it, but he fell to me at like 180 was, what's his face? Oh my goodness. It's right there. He's right there. He plays in Cleveland, Bo Naylor.
He fell to me
near his max pick over the last month, and I scooped him up as because he's one of those guys I have no problem. I have no problem with Wilson Contreras if I want to pay up a little bit, and that's so it's like I think it's just the catcher happy spot, and every podcast is hitting on it, and I feel like we are obligated to because it is catcher month here, per the rumors on every podcast. It is catcher month, so we have to make sure we talk about catchers and our favorite catchers. Okay, Zach, if you're listening, that one's for you. Next time we'll do team specific catchers just to help you out. I want to build off your great concept you have on your podcast, buddy. Okay. Anyway, so back to this conversation that probably no one cares about. Let's see. I don't know. Oh, Evan Carter. Real quick on Evan Carter. I haven't gotten any of them, and it's strictly because I'm afraid that he platoons, and everyone's like, yeah, you know, he platooned down the stretch because they were competing, and I understand he'll probably get a chance to hit lefties, but we're not talking about a small sample here of not being able to hit lefties well. He was never hitting lefties all that well in the minors either. He wasn't known to be a lefty masher, so Carter has platoon splits beyond just the small sample, not to mention when he came up to the throughout the playoffs, I think he started against one or no lefty for reference. And he would even get pinch hit. He would come in midway games and bat against a righty as a pinch hitter, but he would also get pinch hit four. And we're not talking about good players. We're talking about like Robbie Grossman would come in and hit for him against lefties. So obviously that this team, and now this team, it's a long season. Maybe he gets a chance to start hitting against lefties initially, but I think Carter might be in for a platoon sooner than later. And what scares me is like, he's one of the few guys with that question mark in this area. I understand the skill set is attractive. I understand the upside is there, but I also see a lot more safer picks and guys I rather have, at least in DCs. Maybe I'm more willing to take this shot on this type of skill set in a fab league where I can stream players based on schedules and all that to really take advantage of Carter's strong side splits. But I don't know. I'm concerned at the current cost. I have a hard time. What's his max pick? Like 150, 165. So like around there, I think I'd feel more comfortable. Who's going around there? Let's see. Him or Marcelo Zuna. Ooh, that's actually tougher than I thought. I think it might be. I'd rather have him over Wyatt Langford. I'd rather have him over him and Jake Berger. It's kind of a toss up team need at that point. Maybe I'm higher on Berger than I should be. I don't know. It's one of those things where I think Carter belongs closer to his max pick than his ADP or min pick. Like him, yeah. And Teoscar, I think, is a conversation because I understand people worry about Teoscar losing play appearances via defense and some he'll stick in some tougher righties for sure because they have the opportunity to do that. But I think he's just about an everyday guy. So people, I don't know, I'm not too concerned about Teo's playing time. He's another guy.
Yeah, me neither. I like Teoscar here. A lot of this is just like, what do you need?
You know, what do you need?
Power. Yeah, I mean, I like Santander, Teoscar, Berger. Some of those guys have been like my big targets. I've gotten Marcelo Zuna. Like, yeah, if you need power. That's where I like to shop there with those guys. I mentioned a couple of the catchers. Soler is right there. You need
Luis Arraez, baby.
Luis Arraez, yeah.
I just can't.
Batting average. I actually like.
I have one share.
If you want some, like, there's some guys who won't stand out anywhere but give you a little bit of everything. Going a little bit later, like Ke'Bryan Hayes is one of those guys. Noel V. Marte, Ian Happ. Just some of those, like
McCormick,
Chaz McCormick, Riley Green is one. I guess we'll have to see, you know, with his
health,
his health.
I think he's trending towards being ready.
Yeah, but he's another guy who showed last year as well, you know, some improvements.
You also have guys like Trevor Story. That's like, can we get the rebound, or is he kind of, this is who he is? You have a lot of fun pitching here. Nick Pivetta, who showed some flashes again, like he always does. Mitch Keller, that started off very hot and slowed down towards the end of the year. You have Carlos Rodon. We know the ace that he can be, but we also know the health concerns that come with him. Chris Sale, newly acquired by the Braves, so there's excitement there. I think this is where I like to go shopping for an SP5 personally, because it's just a lot of, at this point, I build such a floor for pitching that my SP5 coming from here, I like to take some, like, I'll take some upside gambles here with an SP5.
Yeah, this is where I'll get like my SP4. I really like targeting one or both of the Seattle guys with Bryce Miller and Brian Wu. Miller, I like, you know, really good fastball, really good control, and you see him working on that splitter. We'll see how much like he features that this year, but yeah, if he can establish a good out pitch, a good secondary pitch, I think he's one that can go a long way. We've seen that, you know, with Gilbert and Kirby. You know, Miller, it can be like, you know, very similar profile there. So that's where like I've liked targeting those guys. Shane Baz, I like taking a chance on late here. He's going at 196. If he's like my SP5, if I have like established innings, like I won't take him if I've taken like a Reagans, if I've taken, you know, he's not a good person to pair with, like, you know, Chris Sale and Carlos Rodon, just guys with question marks. But if I have, yeah, if I have established innings eaters with my first like three or four starters, I do like taking a chance on Shane Baz there.
You also have Hunter Brown, Ryan Pepio. Like, there's just so much. There's a lot to like here with the starters. Christian Javier, yeah. if you think Javier can bounce back, he's going in this range. And there's, so it's one of those things where if you feel confident, Braxton Garrett, if you want some floor, like if you feel confident in like your pitcher assessment and can find a few gems in this range, this would be the area you start attacking. Like if you think, yeah, you're really good at it, like you want to say, you know what, screw it, I'm going hitter heavy. I'm going to get my relief pitchers, and I'm going to just not take four or five of these guys, or three of these guys, I'd say. It's risky. I think it's really risky personally, but at least I can understand it because there is such potential here. Guys that, you know, that have a track record, but health is a concern. Guys with upside without so much track record, maybe you're betting on the team context. Like a Hunter Brown, where we've seen success in spurts, but then like the team itself has been able to do well with developing pitchers. I think the Astros are pretty good with pitchers. Ryan Pepio, obviously in Tampa, that goes without saying. I'm surprised he hasn't gotten more helium. Min pick of 141, I get it, but I'm glad. Honestly, I think this is appropriate pricing, because I think this is where he would have settled with LA, and I think it's a very similar potential for innings in Tampa, and I think that the price is a good price for him. I like Pepio. I don't have any, but I do like him. I have no problem. Like, he's a guy that I probably should make a point to get, because I think I'll get a share or two before the season's over, but not a guy that I must have. I think what it is there's no must get guys for me here. There's preferences. I'll have more than others, but this is the area I like to shop. Bieber's a guy I don't touch. I know, I understand what I could be missing, but I saw what I saw last year, and I have no interest in chasing it. Now, in spring, if he comes up and there's some velo there in that fastball, I might change my tune, because I think Bieber, that fastball has dipped so much, so he depends so much on the secondaries, and if he's not able to locate them properly, he can't get the production out of them that he would expect. However, Bieber has that potential to bounce back and be that guy. Some more safe guys, what Willy Adames, you know he's going to play every day, elite defense, batting average is a question mark, but you know what you're getting. Taking a shot on saves, Jose Alvarado sitting there. I think this is, again, goes back to Vinny P, if you want to take a shot on upside, but also like I feel like Vinny P is closer to Josh Naylor than he is to, like, I'm trying to think of upside first baseman. I think people might look at Vinny P closer to like what would be like a four category, maybe like a prime Rizzo, kind of like that guy that's just really solid, yeah, four categories. I think there might be a chance Vinny P is closer to a Josh Naylor, but in a good way, not like in a, like, oh, Josh Naylor's bad. There's a reason why Josh Naylor goes ahead of him, right? Josh Naylor's just, I think Vinny P has a little more power upside, but there's such a safety in that contact rate, such a safety in that approach that Vinny P has. I think there's a closer potential outcome to Naylor than there is to that ceiling that we were hoping for. And I think that reflected in his ADP, which is great. So yeah, I don't know. I just think this 100 through 200 range, I think at the end of the day, we talked about a ton of names. know what you need and attack it in this area. Start. So what I like to do, or what I like to do, is I like to build backwards personally. So I looked in this range, and you know better than most who my exact targets are right now in drafts, right? So I have these targets, these skill sets I'm looking at, and I'm taking these, and that helps me dictate how I'm going to attack the earlier rounds. So tonight I'm doing my first auction, and it might be my only auction, so I'll probably share the results. But I'm probably going to target some of those guys, knowing that, and maybe it'll allow me to spend more or less in higher rounds, knowing how I want to build my team out around those guys. So it's fun. It's a fun, exciting. I'm probably going to do more auctions. Who am I kidding? It's a weird year. I'm taking a step back in content in season, so it's going to allow me to do more drafts. So I'm just going to put that time and effort into my FAB and other stuff. So yeah, I don't know if there's any other names you want to touch on before we get out of here. I don't really. I think we literally rambled through like probably like 50 names and like broke down like 20 of them.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just like I said, this you know, 100 to 200, the early to mid part of that, I like to get a bunch of hitters and then dip back into the pitcher pool. Bailey Ober was one we didn't mention that I like. He's going around 154, mm-hmm. As SP3 or 4. I really like Bailey Ober. And then an underrated hitter going at the end of this range, I like Brandon Nimmo.
See, yeah, I don't. I just don't.
He had the injury concerns, but now he has back-to-back seasons of 673 plate appearances, 682 plate appearances.
What has he done with him? Like, that's 89 the thing.
Runs, 24 homers, 274 batting average. I mean, that plays as your fourth or fifth outfielder.
Yeah, but like, you're not taking him as a fourth outfielder here in a 15-teamer.
Nah. Yeah, he's more like your third or fourth.
That's the problem. He's like, he's your fourth if you drafted outfield heavy.
Yeah, I think that's fine, though. I mean,
I just don't like it. I don't know. I'm not a fan. We don't have to agree. I just.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and he made barrel changes. Rate and hard hit rate, right? Yeah. I think, I mean, 20 homers. And if he has any kind of green light at all, if he can ever just get any kind of green light, he can go 20, 10, 270 with, you know, score 90 to 100 runs. I think that's incredibly valuable there.
Yeah, I get it. I just don't want to bank on something changing like that all of a sudden. But also, I don't know, man. Like, I know the change in approach was like a tangible one. Like, I believe I have to go double check, but I'm pretty sure Nimmo had the power production comes because of a approach change in an attempt to.
Yeah, he dropped power. His ground ball rate like 9%. Dropped his ground ball rate. Yeah,
that'll do it. So yeah, I know there was a change in approach. So I get. So I do buy the power production changes, but I don't know, man. It's just a profile that. I feel like, I don't know, maybe not the batting average. So if like, you need batting average, at least, you know, he's not empty, which is nice, but he's also not the plus he used to be there. So I don't know. I get it. I guess I'm just, I don't know, like, why not just get Heimer Candelaro like a round or two later? I don't know. Maybe because it's not an outfielder, but you get my point. Like, I don't see a whole lot of, oh, it's just not for me. Just not for me. We don't have to agree on everything. I'm aware, but it's just, I'm trying to see it. And I guess I can, if you really hurt my batting average, I'm just not. Maybe he's been a blind spot for me because I haven't even looked at him once. I haven't clicked on his name. I don't even think I looked him up since last season. he's just a guy that I have no real interest in because the skill set to me isn't really what I'm looking for in that range, I guess. Nathan Eovaldi's last name because he's right there at 199. I'm just looking at him like, man, remember how good he was the first half? But then like the velo dropped. But then next thing you know, the dude's like the velo. He found the velo in the playoffs. Was he pitching through injury? Was that velo there? Was he purposely taper off just to try to keep, you know, healthy? I don't know what to expect or what to think there. So I haven't landed on him anywhere. But I think there's upside there. If you want to think that, like, at least you know, like, there's probably a good strong half of Eovaldi coming. Just you got to figure out which half it is. But it's one of those things where it's really annoying because. He showed some like the velo was back up in the playoffs when it mattered, you know, like that's not something you should ignore, but maybe it is. Like, I think my wishy-washiness about him is already telling you enough about how, like, why I don't have him, because I don't know what to expect. And I don't know if projections, I don't know if there is just take the projection for type of thing with him, but I can't get behind it. Like, I just don't have any, I just haven't been able to talk myself into them. There's been times where I look at them, I'm like, I don't know, and just don't do it.
Yeah, I haven't gotten Eovaldi just because there's some pitchers going in the 200s that I like better, and I'm sure we'll get to them in another day. But
if you feel like sharing those names another day, you can. But we'll call it there. George, if you, everybody follow George on Twitter at @Roto_Nino. I'm pretty sure I forgot to mention that at the beginning of the show. You can follow me on Twitter at @Mike_Kurland, and we'll be back in 2 weeks because George is on vacation and he's too good for us. So talk to you soon.